Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a very special episode of the SOM TV podcast. On today's episode, my friend, my attorney, my brother in movies, we are going to talk to Jonah Beer of Pilcrow Wine and Gabriel Glass about wine cameos. This is my favorite thing to do, and full disclosure, it's my birthday, so this is what I wanted to do. So, Jonah, how are you? I've missed you so much.
I am great. Hey, first of all, happy birthday. You really, you don't look your age, and you certainly don't act your age. So, yes. I am thrilled to be here with you, buddy, and talking about more, the things that we just love in life, talking movies and talking wine. So,
talking wine.
Yes, great. Thank you.
On this series, if you've listened to them before, you know that Jonah and I, we find wines that are either oddly placed in movies or pivotal to the plot, call them out. So it's wine cameos. I think we've done, this is our third, or is this our fourth?
I think so. Fourth, maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Okay. They always go off the rails. They're always ridiculous. we've each picked a movie, and we've each picked a TV series. Now, they're not, the movies and the series cannot be about wine. You can't pick Sideways for this. That's just
right.
Cheating. Before we do that, I do want to say, if you're listening to this and you do not belong to SOM TV, go to SOMTV.com, sign up. You can see Jonah on tons and tons of stuff. Great educational videos. I mean, honestly, for as much of a jokester as you are one of the smartest minds in wine. And there's a lot of great stuff. I think you did something on terroir.
That's true.
Believe it or not, that is like still one of the great episodes on SOM TV from an educational standpoint, because you know more about dirt. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you ever got laid in your life with this knowledge, but
still
you know
more. Still waiting for that.
Okay. You know more about dirt than anyone. So go to SOM TV. Yeah. How's that for a read? Go to SOMTV.com and sign up so you can see Jonah talk about dirt and hundreds of other hours of educational and great content and movies and more and more. And then Jonah, you should plug.
Yes,
you should plug Gabriel Glass.
Hey, thank you. After you've done that and you've made your subscription, head over to My Gabriel Glass. I feel like one of those car guys in the Midwest. Like, come on down to Pappy's. Get yourself a used Toyota. You're going to love it.
Except these are good. These are very good glassware.
This is the best glassware. Well, and thank you. And, you know, hey, now more and more of the great people that you see on SOM TV are sporting Gabriel Glass, and we're really proud of it. And thank you for making it prominent in so much of what you guys do. It means a lot.
Prominent. Your backdoor method is just to ship all cast members Gabriel Glass so they use it on whenever they're on camera.
100%. It's easier than paying for some sort of promotional fee. You know, I feel like
I wish I
loading up Claire with tons of glasses, you know, like she just can't. Yeah, it's working out. It's working out. But thank you. Yeah, mygabrielglass.com. Boom. Go there now.
Unbelievable. All right. So let's get to our movies. Okay. As far as this goes, it's rare to have a movie that actually seems to know about wine and also have wine in it. These are really rare things. And when it happens, there's clearly somebody behind the scenes who nudged this scene in or nudged the wine in. In most cases, this just doesn't fit. So you picked a movie, you picked a series.
Yeah.
Should we just jump right in, get going?
Let's do it. Let's jump right in. But I just kind of want to tack on to what you said. It's so funny how much it can take you out of the movie, though, when they're holding up a claret bottle, which is clearly, you know, like some sort of cheap Italian wine. It's still got the DOCG sticker on it, and they're talking about it being DRC. You know, like they wrote it correctly, but no one in props knew what the hell they were doing. And it just drags me right out of it. It's irritating beyond belief. So when you find someone that got it all right, that just wrote it correctly, they had like the right bottle, the right label, it's the real thing. Like, then it feels like, who is there? Is the director really into wine? Is someone on the cast really? Because when they nail it, it's fabulous.
Such a small sect. I mean, you and I and maybe like 14 other, you know, anyone in the wine business, you're watching like The Bear and you're like, oh my God, they actually got that wine right. Like they actually, you know, my favorite all-timer is like when they're talking about opening an expensive bottle of wine and the wine they pull is like a Chianti in a basket.
Yeah.
And they're pouring it and they're making a big deal out of it. And you're what?
Yeah.
I don't understand. But it's such a visual representation of a wine that's not expensive. You clearly didn't give a shit about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my first pick, my movie that I chose for today's podcast is one I wanted very much to not be the film school guy and pick like some, you know, Ozu, some Japanese film from 1949 that was dealing with, you know, heartbreak. And I wanted to pick something that most people have seen, if not all people. And if you haven't seen the movie, I'm about to say, holy crap, guys, you need to turn this podcast off and watch it. My pick is Jurassic Park, little film directed by a guy named Steven Spielberg. But there's a really pivotal scene. I don't think many people need me to sum up what Jurassic Park is about, but I'll do 10 seconds here. They bring dinosaurs back using DNA from blood found in mosquitoes, and they put them on an island off of Costa Rica, and everything goes as planned. So, okay. So there is a scene in this. The movie starts with a dinosaur dig, and you have Dr. Grant and his paleobotanist wife, played by Laura Dern, and they are in Montana Badlands. And they have the whole thing where they show the kid what a velociraptor could do by splitting his stomach open and his guts would spill on the floor and blah, blah, blah. After they do that, they find the velociraptor skeleton, a helicopter lands, and it compromises their dig that is happening. So they go inside of their base camp, and inside they find a small little old man played by one of the truly great directors ever and actors. He was in The Great Escape, Mr. Attenborough.
Yeah.
You know? And so Attenborough is in there and he's got in his hand a bottle of Moet Chandon Imperial Champagne. And let's play the clip.
What the hell do you think you're doing in here? Hey, we were saving that.
But today, I guarantee it.
Who in God's name do you think you are?
John Hammond.
And I'm delighted to meet you finally in person, Dr. Grant.
All right, so as you can see, he pulls this bottle out, pops it open, and it is to celebrate something that they don't quite yet know. And they're going to learn when they go to the island that dinosaurs have been brought back to life. Now, the reason this is really important, and there are a number of reasons, this bottle of wine is the way you meet this character. You meet one of the most important characters in the film and one of the richest men and supposedly one of the smartest men on the planet, or at least maybe in like a Barnum and Bailey kind of way. He's like a game show kind of guy. Wants to build this gigantic park. So I have a couple issues and a couple things that I'm very happy they did with this.
Okay.
So they have this big long conversation. Then they pour the Moet and Chandon. He talks over and over and over again. His big line in the movie is, I spared no expense. Every single time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I spared no expense. You know, they get in the Jeep. The Jeep's, you know, got all this tech in it. I spared no expense. They fly in the helicopters. I spared no expense. Fucking John Williams score is blasting. I mean, nobody spared expense at all on this movie. Can I ask you an honest question? This guy didn't bring his own bottle of champagne to go talk to these guys, and he steals theirs out of the fridge.
So I think that's what's like part of the setup here that's important is that, yeah, he shows up empty-handed, right? Like he goes, this was something that these two scientists out in the Badlands, this is the bottle that they had set aside for when something good happened, like this velociraptor dig goes really well, right? He gets in the tent. He apparently is quick to snoop, you know.
And, like he knew it was there.
Yeah, like he knows it's there. He gets the bottle. Yeah, he's stealing their special thing. Now, I feel like, yes, did he spare an expense? Quite clearly he did. Didn't bring his own champagne with him to try to celebrate this or to woo them back to the island, which I think is, if I recall, that's the intent, right? It's to get them to come and kind of punch holes in the technology and the theory and what's happened, right?
Well, he doesn't want holes, but his investors do. So they want, he is thinking, I'm bringing in two people who are paleontologists who study the past, who are going to be on my side, that it was a good idea to bring dinosaurs back from extinction. So he's thinking, and so they're his like ringers in the realm of the lawyers are going to be on the island and, you know, they don't, you know, they're not going to get it. They're going to say this is too dangerous. Whereas these guys are going to go, this is a great idea to bring back poisonous spitting dinosaurs and Tyrannosaurus Rexes and, you know, just whatever. And the other issue that I have with this, which is these are minor quips. I love this character introduction. I'm obsessed with the way characters are introduced in a film. I wonder what would happen if they didn't have a bottle of champagne in there.
Yeah,
would he have just pitched them on coming to an island in Costa Rica? Because without the champagne, right, it doesn't seem as fun. Is this a good enough bottle?
I mean, from this character's perspective, no. He should have shown up with something, you know, pretty extraordinary, right? Like we'll talk about one later on. But I think for the actual, if we're thinking about from the perspective of the two archaeologists, I think it was like appropriately cast. I think the bottle was properly cast for them and what they were doing. I think that the fact that he pilfers it and pours it into a large tumbler, you know, and starts talking about like how great it is. Like, he's a putz. Like his character is a bit of a putz in this moment. But I think the bottle is properly cast for them.
And maybe it's the good idea that he does not have his own bottle. It shows him as kind of not a shyster or a huckster, but like a guy who's like kind of, you know, Barnum and Bailey's. Like he doesn't really, he's using other people's money for his dreams kind of.
Yeah. There's a little snake oil salesman there, you know, kind of thing. He is good at it. Well, he sells it the whole time. I still think it's a good idea to get some amber, find a mosquito, and let's draw up some more of these dinosaurs, you know.
I will tell you right now, I was 14 when this movie came out. So this movie came out in 1994, the same year, coincidentally, old Steven Spielberg released Schindler's List as well. You know, no problem. Those two movies in 1 year.
Wow.
But when I saw it, I had the same thing. Me and my 14-year-old friends, we were like, all right, we got to go find some amber. This is it. We're going to be rich. We're going to bring back all these animals. It's going to be woolly mammoths running around and saber-toothed tigers and dinosaurs. And it just seems so plausible. And I'd read the Michael Crichton book too. I was like obsessed with Michael Crichton at this time.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But, you know, it's just to be able to use a bottle of wine to say all that you needed to say about who John Hammond is, the proprietor of Jurassic Park, and also what's going to go wrong. I think it's all in the introduction with this Moet Imperial. So, yeah.
I think it is. And I think it's also a very clever way. And I think throughout the entire film, you know, they play up the product placements, you know, and all the stuff that's going on. Like, you know, everything's got a sponsor, right? Now, they play it that it's John Hammond and it's the park, but also it's the movie, right? So, like, you know, Jeep and Pepsi and everyone that had like a cameo in there. I feel like this was also the first one because like even the way he pours the bottle, I mean, the label is perfectly facing the camera, you know, like everything is like it's a Moet Chandon product placement
happening at the same time.
I definitely think so. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I always wonder with these because it's like when we did our previous one, we talked about Forgetting Sarah Marshall with Clos de Vaux. That was a straight up ad.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no question about it because that's the only thing in the entire cellar. At the place.
Even in the recycling bin, where like when they're putting the empties in there, it's a trash can filled with just Clos de Vaux cab, you know, for all the great fish. But yeah.
In this one, it's interesting because it's not crazy overt, but it's definitely they're pointing Moet and Chandon. And Moet is like, you know, they sponsor like the Golden Globes and such.
Yeah.
And they're definitely, they're out there doing this kind of thing. They want to be seen. But this movie is the second coming of like Star Wars merchandising because Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, there's even a shot when things go tits up of the gift shop at Jurassic Park, and it shows all these like stuffed dinosaurs and like kits with bones you can build and stuff. And I'm like, they're just priming us to want to buy crap from this, even when just in the movie. So like, I'm looking at this right now, and I would like a glass of wine.
Exactly.
It's so good.
I want his shirt. I want that hat. You know, I'm like, all right, I love this guy. And I think it, so listen, I'm going to go with properly cast for the bottle just because based on who procured it. Two scholars on probably working on a grant out in the middle of the desert. This feels appropriate.
This would be it.
All right.
Well, so
I think so.
A rare high marks from you and I on a movie that did it right.
Yeah, that did it right and did it with a product placement.
I'm so excited about your movie, Jonah.
Okay.
So excited.
All right. So I think that when thinking about this, I went with a movie that I think not only gets the wine correct, like it's appropriate for the character, it's properly cast, everything about it feels right. But to me, they also get the swagger correct of someone who is a real billionaire bon vivant that loves life and loves the finer things and clearly enjoys them, but none of them are ever feel like trophies for him, right? Like everything, it feels like everything's going to get consumed or used, like nothing's precious. So I love that because I think it teaches us also about—
Well, what movie? What movie?
I'm going to tell you. It's the Thomas Crown Affair, the second one, Rene Russo, Pierce Brosnan, still with Faye Dunaway. I mean, a great callback to the Steve McQueen version. I just think that throughout the movie, there's three kind of key times when I think that they just nail the wine correctly. And I think that Pierce Brosnan as Thomas Crown, I think, might be his greatest character he's ever played.
I think that he's a better Bond in this movie than he is as a Bond. And I grew up with him as my Bond. He was like, every generation gets their Bond. I was just too young for it to be Daniel Craig or whatever. This is your movie. I'm sorry. I do love this film. Like, and they had to nail it. I'm sure if you're an art person, that maybe they botched something.
Right.
But for me in the wine stuff, they had to nail it. And I don't know enough about art collecting to know if they screwed anything up. I'm sure they did, but anyways.
Oh, you talk about like great introductions of a character. I think this is one of the classics, right? Like the first 8 minutes of the movie are him just kind of going through his day, right? You know, like I think he buys a company, he sells a company. You know, we see him get to his office. We know he owns this big building. We're 4 or 5 minutes in, and then he's sitting at the Met looking at this painting. And unless you know what the movie is, you're just thinking it's just a Wall Street tycoon kind of rich guy. And then, of course, it kind of tears into action, right? And I'm sure everyone's seen it. So he steals this painting off the wall. He escapes. It's just very well done. It's all done in broad daylight. He's not in a disguise. He's set it up perfectly. As he's walking into his, you know, Upper East Side brownstone house, his manservant, Paul, as he walks in, he hands him the briefcase that's got the stolen painting in it. And he says, can you put this in the office? And Paul says, yes, sir. And I put a bottle of wine out. And it's just kind of like the first thing that we know about this guy is that he's coming home. He's had his day. The first thing he wants is a beautiful bottle of wine. And then you see him walking and he's like kind of casually holding it and pouring himself a glass, and he's having that first sip, and he puts it down, and it's like gigot cote rôti. And I was kind of like, that's kind of a good call. Like, you know, it's not La Landon or La Turque or something but it's like, hey, that's a really nice bottle of wine that would be this guy's pre-dinner, let's wind down kind of sipper. And he pours the glass, and he looks at the painting, and you're just kind of like, he's off and running. To me, it kind of sets the stage for every other wine references that come later. Great character introduction and a fantastic kind of first glimpse into this guy's kind of wine drinking life. What do you think?
There's nuance to that. There's nuance to have picked a bottle that would be accessible, but not cheap, would be actually good, but not like absurd. I mean, if he were to open up a first growth Bordeaux, you'd be like, this is bullshit. And somebody was like, you know, I just learned about Latour, so we're going to put Latour down. And no one's going to drink that as they're like, it's Tuesday, I'm a bored rich guy wine.
Yeah, exactly. And not only a show off. And that's the point. Like, this character is not a show off. This character is someone that really loves the things that he's into. Certainly the wine and certainly the art. So to me, I think it's a great call. I love the casting of that bottle. I think it's just about spot on.
And then, of course, there's much more wine. I mean, I know this isn't a movie podcast, it's a wine podcast, but man, I just want to say, Rene Russo, to me, 19-year-old Jason, Rene Russo in this movie kind of made me say...
49-year-old Jonah still thinking about Rene Russo in this film. She's just incredible. They cast her right. Okay, so then we meet her character. She's brilliant in it. And he's done his research that she drinks champagne. They're at Cipriani, right? Like even the fact that the cops are tailing them, and like they're supposed to go to Le Cirque, and he goes, hey, but I see it. You know, one cop tells the other one, tells Dennis Leary's character, like, they're walking into Cipriani. And then he quips to himself, like, and without a reservation. Like, and it's just like, again, just like how baller this guy is, that he can just roll up on a Saturday to Cipriani in the middle of dinner service and just get his table. And he knows that she drinks champagne. He's done his research. And yeah, and it's like, what champagne? Oh, she'll have champagne. No, it's not she'll have champagne. It's Krug Grand Cuvée 1981. And it's like, okay, he knows that he's trying to impress her. Go for the Krug. Like, you know, it's not a just have a glass of bubbles, sweetheart. And so to me, again, perfectly cast. A billionaire trying to impress this girl on a date. Of course he's going to go with Krug, right?
Or I think it's great. I think it's perfect. It would have been too easy to do Dom. Like, Dom is like what you'd expect somebody who doesn't, not lazy research, but it's just too easy.
Yeah.
Whereas Krug, exactly. Vintage Krug, makes sense.
Yeah. You kind of went there. You kind of did sense. It. Yeah.
I mean, wine people, they know Krug, but you take two steps outside of the wine world and like a lot of people don't know. It's not that they maybe never heard of it, but they don't know its place. So,
no, for sure.
And then there's the, what's the other wine? There's one more big wine in this film. Petrus, right?
Yeah. So we never see it. And it's funny because it's like, okay, so they go to Martinique. He flies her, you know, they do that great glider
plane.
No,
it's a glider plane. Yeah. Yeah.
That great sequence. And then they land, and then he calls his jet and they pick him up. And then instead of landing in Manhattan, you know, they land in Martinique. I did want to point out that the flight from, you know, where they were somewhere in New England to New York would have been 18 minutes, and the flight to Martinique would be a few hours. So yeah. How she acts so surprised when she sees that it's not Manhattan, I think tells us that she wanted to be there. But
one more little nitpick too. She goes without any clothes and she's fine with that. I've never met a woman in my life that's willing to just get on a plane, fly internationally with just the clothes on their back.
Okay.
That's questionable.
But that leads to, and in fact, my wife said, as I was ready to record, she said, tell Jason my favorite part of that movie. And it is exactly that they
he has all the clothes
and he's got the clothes in the yeah. thing, and like, and that they're all the right size and everything.
Yeah.
So obviously they're at this great house, and he says he never brings anyone there. And like, by the way, as this movie comes out in 1999, right? So that's like right when I had moved here to Napa. It was my first year. I was single, as we've already established. I was trying to date unsuccessfully. I was writing down everything he does in this movie, I tried to use as a line at some point. Like, you know, like, oh, what a great restaurant. This must go over with people you bring here. I don't bring anyone here. You know, like he is so smooth. So they're having I think crab, they're eating dinner, they're outside, they're around the fire. He is kind of toying with her a little bit with a painting and a crate that we're all supposed to think is the stolen painting. But she's not buying it. And at some point she gets up to put an end to it and picks it up and throws it into the fire. And in a really great bit of acting, just his facial expression during the scene while they're both watching the crate catch on fire and this thing burn makes you feel like, yeah, that's what it would look like for a guy like that who really just watched his Renoir go up in flames. As they're kind of both realizing what she's done, that she's just destroyed a probably priceless work of art, he points to the bottle that's on the table in front of him and he says, you know, the 85 wasn't really good. We should get something else. And she goes, yeah, something else. Now she's perplexed. And he says, Petrus would be good. And she's like, yeah, Petrus would be great. And it's like this relief moment of like, okay, did I just fuck this up and burn this guy's priceless painting? And let's put out these flames with a little Petrus. Perfectly cast.
I think now Petrus has become something it wasn't in 1999. So it was a better cast then than it is now. Now it's like LeBron James like drinks Petrus and stuff like that. So it's got an air of like my first wine because I'm rich, but I'm also, you know, whatever. I love this movie. It's a perfect call. I would give them literal A+ marks on nailing the wine cameos in this.
That's good.
Okay. I do. Such a good call. I love this movie. If anyone has not seen, I don't know how you listen to all of that and have not seen The Thomas Crown Affair in 1999, but it's a great film.
I kind of nailed the reenactment there too. Just want to say, for those that haven't seen it, when you see it now, you'll be like, God, that Jonah, he really nailed that scene. Like I'm like a wordsmith.
All right, here we go. I'm gonna try to do try to be more concise on my show. You picked a television show. I picked one. This is technically kind of cheating. It was a limited series, but it was a TV show.
Yeah.
So I picked the ultimate in ultimate dad shows. I picked Band of Brothers. This is the last thing I think that has aired that, you know, grandson, grandfather, and you could all sit on the same couch and all love it. Yep. And I can hear the opening right now. You know, it's just this beautiful... beautiful, stunning piece of music, and it's heartwarming, and it's you go through Easy Company all the way from D-Day, where they drop in parachutes, airborne, all the way through the Battle of the Bulge, all the way through, you know, Germany surrendering, all the way through conquering, where my scene comes in the last episode, conquering Hitler's eagle's nest, as it's
eagle's
called.
Eagle's nest, yep.
And so they get to Austria, where all of the high Nazi command have built their summer homes, and Hitler's is there. I want to play the clip as to what the Eagle's Nest is, where these American soldiers walk into.
The Eagle's Nest was a surprise birthday present for Hitler, built with Nazi party money. A mountaintop stone retreat, 8,000 feet up, accessible by a gold-plated elevator. It was one of the crown jewels of his empire. And the man was afraid of heights.
You know, Hitler, Goring, Goebbels, these people did not know shit about anything that they claimed to know about. Wine, art, all the highfalutin things that they stole from everybody else as the war raged on and, you know, in terrible ways. They truly didn't know anything. They were just aping other people's culture and trying to make it look like they were smart and wealthy and, you know, they were just thugs. Anywho, point is, at the next door residence of this eagle's nest, which was, I believe, Goebbels, they had the most astounding wine cellar, probably in Europe, of all pillaged wines.
Yeah.
And so I think it's hinted at somebody who likes alcohol maybe a little too much, played by Ron Livingston, who's a character. And throughout the entire time, he's looking for bottles. He finds something. He's very happy. And there is this moment in the end when they walk into this wine cellar up in the Austrian Alps, and he looks at it in a way anyone else would look at all the gold in Fort Knox. And so he gets to have any of the alcohol he wants. So I'm gonna play the clip of when they walk into the wine cellar adjacent to the Eagle's Nest.
10,000 bottles of the world's finest liquor, wine, and champagne helped Easy Company mark the day the war in Europe came to an end.
It's all yours. Take what you want and have each company take a truckload.
And so they go through and there's this high, you know, you take everything you want, take truckloads. There's 10,000 bottles of wine in this place. I can only imagine. And I wish to God that I knew what was in here. Now, this is a true story. This happened. The American soldiers went there. They got this wine. They drank tons and tons and tons and tons of it. I'm sure that everybody was lights out wasted for weeks while they were waiting for their next orders. And rightfully so, they're all going to go die possibly in Japan, you know, in months after this. So they screwed up one thing. So Ron Livingston, he goes to this giant wall and he says, "Happy Victory in Europe Day to me." And he reaches up and he pulls a bottle down. And you know, everyone's railing against AI and all these AI images. And I'm with them on that, down with AI. But there's this, they show the label of this bottle. They stick the landing on this because they show the American soldiers sitting up on the balcony overlooking the Alps and they're drinking Veuve Clicquot, which likely could have been a champagne that would have been in these people's houses just for drinking.
Yeah.
Veuve would have made sense. They seem to be period bottles. And then they get into this wine cellar and he pulls a bottle and the only bottle you see, and trust me, I scrubbed this episode to death. Only label you see is something that says Chateau Burgundy. Chateau Burgundy. And it's like Burgundy.
Oh, that's so good.
And the problem is too, it's got this family crest above it like a German bottle would have.
Yeah.
It's not real. And it sort of kind of says Pomeroy, but I'm not sure that it actually does. It looks like it just says Pomoy. So here's my problem with this
bottle.
They effed this up last minute when you could have just had faking a French wine bottle could be the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You just need some Ludi, you need some terms, you need some. But this one, by making it close, they went so far away. It'd be like they're throwing a baseball on a football field. You know, I just don't understand how they could screw this up. And it hurts my heart for maybe one of the best, if not the best, limited television series in the history of TV, based on one of the most important things that has ever happened, you know, defeating Nazis in World War II. And your reward is 10,000 bottles of great wine, and you show me Chateau Burgundy or whatever the hell this is. I am mortified, Jonah. And this makes me very sad because it's a true story. That's my series.
Listen, it's a great one. What a great series. I remember vividly that scene on the balcony, though, at Eagle's Nest when they're like lounging and drinking just tons of, and I think in the previous scene, like someone was talking about like they were stealing the silver, like everyone was taking home what they wanted, right?
Yep.
I do remember the shot, and I think it's from behind, and I think it's Damian Lewis standing in front of the wall of wine at the beginning, like that, and someone had been guarding it for him to bring Ron Livingston to it.
That's right.
He had assigned someone to it. Was that's such a good scene. That's so good. I did not notice, I'm ashamed to say, the Chateau Burgundy Pomery.
It's pretty. It looks like an AI created label. Like AI was like, "Oh, this looks like give me wine, French Chateau." And they're like, "Okay," and they just come up with this nonsense. So I don't know if you're the graphic designer who did this, and you like, I clearly had 1 minute to design this label. you still did a terrible job.
Yeah,
I'm
you
sorry.
Still failed.
You should never
you
work again. Yeah. It's over for you. And this is why I would also extend my services to anyone listening as a wine consultant on any professional projects you have. They need anything. To have this. It's yeah. like it's like an intimacy coordinator. You know, they have yeah. those for like sex scenes.
Oh,
wow. You need the wine coordinator on set to make sure that the wine is also handled properly.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. I think you could do both. I'm just going to say right now, you yeah. could be a twofer on set.
Yeah, I think people would really trust me with their naked bodies in front of a
yeah,
camera.
Yeah,
that's a
yeah,
good call.
Yeah.
I know you have.
All right, so what was so many times? So your, many times.
What was your series?
I have kind of an I have a different one, and obviously a different one, but I have a different reason too for it. It's because they got it all right. Like they got every detail right of the bottle that they show. Like every single thing, including the wooden box, is accurate. The show is recently streaming for the first time on Amazon Prime. It is the 1990s mega hit Northern Exposure. Do you remember this show?
Huge show, yeah. Oh, didn't it have a moose walking through the town yeah. in the opening credits? Yeah,
the opening credits are perfect.
It was a huge show.
Huge show. John Clark, Rob Morrow, Barry Corbin, great cast. And for those that don't know it, it's a classic fish out of water story. A New York doctor can't pay for medical school, so the state of Alaska pays for his medical school if he goes and does works as a doctor in Alaska because they didn't have enough. He gets there. He thinks he's going to go to Anchorage. He goes to this tiny little town called Sicily, the Alaska Riviera, and it's a one moose town, as yeah. you put it. You know, it is small. But in this town is this guy named Maurice Minifield. He's an astronaut. He's rich. He's got a communications company, oil company, all this stuff. And he's very, very into food and wine and the finer things. And my favorite episode, which is like season 4, episode 21, it's called The Big Feast. And it's a celebration dinner that he's having. And anyone that's in food and wine in restaurants, you have to just watch this one episode, if nothing else, because it includes Adam, the Michelin star chef, who's living kind of in Alaska because he's gone a little bit psychotic. It includes everything you'd expect from that, and all the foodies flying in, the truffles and the foie gras and the white asparagus. And Shelley, the local waitress, is looking at some of the stuff, and she sees this box, this wooden box. It says it's a Latour wine box, and she opens it up, and there's straw, and she asks, why is there straw? And she's told it's to cushion the wine, and she picks up the bottle, and she's commenting on how dusty it is, and 1929 Chateau Latour. And she's asking the person, was it expensive? And they start at $10, and they get to like $50, and she can't believe it. And as she turns, she breaks the bottle and the bottom falls out and the wine's gone. She picks up she's holding the main piece of the bottle. She picks up the bottom and she like squirrels away the evidence and she runs, right? She can't believe she broke this expensive bottle. And here's where it gets fabulous. Adam's wife finds out about this, the chef's wife, and says, let's make another one. And she says, well, we can't. It's old. It's 1929 Latour. And you hear in this woman, her name is Eve, the character's name is Eve, like, oh, 29 Latour, this is going to be difficult. But we can do it. We can create a fake 29 Latour.
This is amazing.
This great. The scene, they've got the bottle upside down. They start with just like regular red jug wine, you know. She's got peat moss. She's got liquid smoke. She's got vanilla. And she's adding little bits and stirring it with her finger and tasting it.
Shelley, peat moss, please. Isn't this dirt? Calling pots as crocuses in it. It'll lend sediment and a nice earthy undertone. It's close. Vanilla. Are you sure this is going to work? A good deep color with a plummy veneer and a velvety nose.
And she gets to the point where she's created the fake 29 Latour, and they put the bottom back on, and they slip it back into the cellar. And then like the final payoff is at the end as Maurice opens the bottle and as the prize of his cellar, and he offers a taste to Adam as the chef that saved the day. And just the way Adam like describes the wine and, you know, the nose and the plummy veneer and the velvety touch. Like, it's all perfect. You know, earthy undertones, which is the peat moss was added for earthy undertones. And they just nail it. It's so good. It's the original, it's the Rudy Kernowan origin story. I'm telling you.
I think this episode is so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
If this episode was on anything now, you'd be like, they ripped this off from like Sour Grapes or, you
absolutely.
Know, something like the Rudy story or something like that. It's amazing that this exists because, you know, some writer was obsessed with wine and was getting into it and probably thought, you know, probably heard a story that you can bullshit fake. I mean, I would love to know how, you know, how that came about. Did they have the real Latour label?
Yes, the real Latour label. Capsule looked like the right color. It's kind of like that darker red, you know, back when it was on lead instead of tin. Everything about it looks right. And the wooden box, everything. It's just great. And then there's this scene, and I know that, I hope that John can play some clips too, but there's the scene where, like, they're just talking about wine. And they mentioned Ducru Beaucaillieu. And, you know, two of them know what it is and Dr. Fleischman doesn't. They even just describe, like, the size of that chateau and how they found it. Everything about it is so precise. And it's not just this episode. It runs the entire series. It probably, above all else, gets wine more correct more often than anything I've ever seen.
Wow. Interesting. I used to love this show. I didn't know shit about wine then, but obviously. But
give it a rewatch,
I did like
man.
Show. I will.
Give it a rewatch. It really holds up. It's really fabulous. It's funny. It's clever. And it was way ahead of its time.
So good. I love doing this with you so much, Jonah. You are the absolute best. As soon as it was like, I can do anything I want for this pod, I was like, I want to have Jonah on and I just want to talk about movies and I want to get it to where there's only one person listening at the very end. And,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's your mom, as always.
My mom's probably giving up. She's probably gone by now. No, it's this weird guy, Jerry, lives in Kansas City. Thanks, Jerry, for hanging on, buddy. No, this is good. I want to know from all of you, if you're still listening, what other movies and shows should we do on this? Man, there's a couple I really wanted to do, but Jonah hadn't seen them, so we were going to hold till the next one. You know, hit us up. DM us on social media. I would love to hear. And Jonah, my friend.
Hey, happy birthday, buddy.
Thanks, my man. I appreciate it. For all of you listening, as a birthday present to me, go to SomTV.com. Subscribe. That would be really nice.
That's a happy birthday.
There's a lot of stuff on there. Some great movies, you know.
There's a lot of great stuff.
Of course, you know, get your Gabriel Glass.
My GabrielGlass1S.com.
Okay. All right, bud. Well, I will talk to you again. I'm going to go watch more movies. I'm going to come to fire up Northern Exposure.
You're going to love it. You're going to be happy. And I've got the one movie you told me about. I won't spoil what it is for next time, but I'm going to watch that this weekend.
Okay, it's great. And you know what we should do is we should probably tell some people which movies we're going to do so they can watch them.
Oh, interesting.
In advance.
Yeah.
So we'll do that for you guys next time.
Assuming we have an audience. I love that.
Yeah, assuming we do. My mom. I'll be like, Mom, just watch these. And Jerry.
I'll DM her.
All right, good. All right, bye, everybody. Be safe. Drink something nice.